We'll look at the tape.
It's intentional grounding.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hope.
I'm violent.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
Welcome in, episode 74 of Intentional Grounding. It's back to work Wednesday, as Mark Treshman would say. Actually, it was back to work Tuesday. Now it's still at work Wednesday. And that's why we're moving the podcast up a day this week, because this is a Saturday game, a rare Saturday game for the Chicago
Christmas
Bears.
Eve. It's a holiday cheer.
It's going to be exciting.
How many people are going to be there?
A lot
of people celebrate on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually surprised that the crowd was as big as it was.
Yes.
On Sunday with the freezing cold weather. Now, not too many people, I felt like, pointed out, though, that it was probably 35, 40% Packer fans in there.
That's correct.
And you're not going to have that many Washington fans.
Unless people are traveling to Chicago for a holiday weekend. Maybe they have family here. Maybe they want to make something out of it. But I can't.
They travel okay, usually.
Yeah,
but
they
do. But it's Christmas
Eve. Yes.
So I don't
know.
It's
a tough travel day to begin with.
Right. So I think it's going to be pretty
Someone in the media room suggested maybe 15,000. Now I said, come on.
No.
I think it's at least half full.
I would say, yeah, you're still at 35, 40,000.
Right. I think there's a...
And that's probably low.
Yeah. I think there's a good portion of fans who probably have made this part of their Christmas plans to begin with. Bears game, Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. Do your thing.
This is episode 74. It's the Jimbo Covert episode.
Easy pick.
Not Jermaine Bushrod.
Who is part of the playoff-bound Dolphins right now.
Yeah.
Soon to be playoff-bound.
A lot of interesting situation down there in Miami with Adam Gase, who apparently can be a head coach, without a doubt. Good hire down there, it looks like. Yes, episode 74, Adam Johns, Adam Hogue here with you. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S, and follow the podcast at INT Grounding Pod. Read us at WGNradio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. We both have pieces up on the first topic we're going to talk about here, and you can find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. I do want to give a quick shout-out to Jack Silverstein from Windy City Gridiron, who, remember in the last episode I mentioned the Wani going for two against the Packers? I couldn't remember what year it was, but just right at the end of the game, the Bears scored a touchdown, field goal, extra point would have tied it. He decided to go for two, go for the win. It was 1997, and he actually wrote a piece about this.
Well, Jack's a bit of a Bears historian. Do you remember when he used to come out to Hallis Hall? I think he was writing for Red Eye. I think the last time it was the last year of Lovie Smith's rule at Hallis Hall, so that'd be 2012. He did a fantastic piece on the Bears and boxing. I'm not talking about boxing. I'm talking about how they used to run around the locker room with those giant cardboard boxes and jam it over each other's heads. It was a game that they used to play that Urlacher had going with the offensive players. I vividly recall Matt Forte getting Charles Tillman at some point when the media was in there. But he went into great detail, I think it was for Red Eye, about that story. But those are distant, happier, lovey-like times.
Yeah, this locker room doesn't have stuff like that, or at least not that we know about. It's not as...
I think they got some things,
It's an okay locker. It's certainly better than the Trestman era, but it's not what it...
We have so many young guys who don't even know.
Well, it's hard to build stuff like that when you barely even have a core of players.
Right. I mean, at that point, the guys running around with boxes. We're talking about Matt Forte, Charles Tillman, Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher, Israel Adonijé. Yeah. They're boxing players. Anyway,
Jack was kind of thinking along the same lines as me when I brought that up the other day, and he wrote a good piece on WindyCityGridiron.com. Just the whole situation, going for two there in 1997 with Eric Kramer throwing a pass to Raymont Harris.
Oh, boy. What names?
That it fell incomplete. It didn't get it, but you know, it's just kind of comparing that situation against the Packers at Soldier Field, going for the win compared to what John Fox failed to do on Sunday. And by the way, he didn't help his cause on Monday trying to explain what his thinking was by not going for the win, I'm trying to think exactly what he said, but it didn't make sense. Oh, the 10-second runoff thing.
Yeah.
By not taking it and then not calling timeout, he admitted that if they would have gotten the stop and gotten the ball back, they wouldn't have had enough time.
No, they would have, right?
No, they would have had about 30 seconds.
Still. That's what he wanted.
But the point is...
He's not clear in a lot of comments.
The point is, if you're going to not take the 10-second runoff, you should use one of your timeouts right there.
Right.
Because the clock ran...
All the way down to three.
But the clock ran from the point they set the ball.
Oh, yeah. So, I know what you're saying.
So then you ended up running off 10 seconds anyway before they even snapped the ball. There's just a lot of... The philosophies there... And this kind of, I think it actually took me a couple days to kind of break down everything that happened. They contradicted themselves too much. You're either going for the win or not going for the win. You're trying to conserve time or not conserve time. Then you run the ball on third down. They didn't. They passed it. There's just, then you take the 10-second runoff. Then you don't call timeout. It just, none of it jives together. It just shows that a head coach was kind of just flying by the seat of his pants, and there wasn't much actual thought put into it. I mean, that's the only way we can look at it, and John Fox's answers on Monday trying to explain it didn't really help.
Well, he does that intentionally. We know that, right? He's misdirection is his thing when he's at the podium. It is.
How does that help him?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But I understand a lot of coaches bungle the clock management. I mean, it's just... I get it. Whatever.
In all the things in football that confuse me the most, it is how many, because you're right, so many coaches screw up.
Even the great ones, Bill Belichick, it happens.
But what's weird about it is so many of us sitting up in our hot dog laden press box or at home on the couch watching on TV can have watched enough football that we're processing it and know what to do. How's a head coach?
I don't want to come off like I'm defending all these coaches who, I mean, Lovey used to do it all the time, bungle these decisions. But there's 1,000 thoughts probably racing through their mind at that point. 1,000 voices even recommending this and this and that. And look, it's probably a very convoluted situation in that 25 seconds where they got to decide what to do, or 5 seconds. Just saying.
I know it all happens fast, but so does any other sport where you got to call a play on the fly. In basketball, if you don't have any timeouts left, you got to.
Yeah.
In baseball, you have a certain amount of seconds where you got to signal to your batter what you want him to do there. I mean, it's a little different in football, but something like that, where so many people at home understand the situations, it seems like the coach that's getting paid millions and millions of dollars should be able to get it right.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm ready to move on.
That's fair. All right, fine. Fair enough.
They've moved on. We've moved on. We got to talk about Kyle Fuller, man.
I know. Let's dive right into it. So this was the news of the day. Really, the news of the week, the way it all turns out. It's not over yet.
We should probably clarify or provide that by the time you listen to this. So, Kyle Fuller's either going to be on the active roster or officially done for the year.
The deadline is, we're recording this on Wednesday morning, the deadline to activate Kyle Fuller is 3 p.m. today. So, yeah, good chance that the majority of our listeners will be listening to this after. So I guess there's a very small chance he is activated, and I don't think that changes anything though. The writing is on the wall here that Kyle Fuller most likely won't be activated, And even if he is, and even if he plays his last two games, which is unlikely, his time as a Chicago Bear is probably winding down here.
Yeah, the damage has been done. Even if he comes back and plays pretty well against the Minnesota Vikings in Week 17, Vic Fangio said himself that's such a small sample size. How did he describe it? It could be misleading in terms of their evaluations. Right. So yeah. It's been a wasted year for Kyle Fuller after going under the knife for a minor knee procedure, a scope in his right knee. And here he is still. Look, it's not good when your head coach can't give definitive comments about your desire. It's not good when your defensive coordinator basically says you're not chopping at the bit. It's a bad, bad look for Kyle Fuller.
Well, let's set this up. So Fuller has the knee scope in August. It seemed like both sides were making it clear that he shouldn't miss that much time. He might even be back for the season opener. If not, he should only miss a couple weeks. And the fact that the Bears didn't put him on IR was an indication that that was the plan.
Yes, they waited.
He missed the first three games, though, which was surprising. And then they suddenly put him on IR, which was very surprising.
I think that's the first sign of their first public sign.
That there's some kind of disagreement going on between
frustration in terms of what the heck, kid. So I can't remember exactly what was going on with the Bears then, but I think there were a couple injuries, and they basically needed to open up a roster spot.
There was that going on.
So with his,
I forgot exactly who it was with, but they did need a roster spot, and I think they weren't seeing eye to eye. And they were probably seeing this issue that Fangio brought up yesterday already back then. So here's what happened yesterday. We'll play for you what Fangio said, but he was asked if he has any say on this decision with Kyle Fuller.
No, I mean, I would if it got to that stage, but, you know, anytime a guy's hurt, you know, there's three stages to getting back to the field. One is you got to get medical clearance. Two, the player's got to say he's ready to go and feels confident and he's chomping at the bit to go play. And then the coaches get involved to see if he's better than what the other choices are and if he really is back to being able to play. You know, A has happened, B hasn't, so C is a non-issue.
So there it is. I mean, it's on the player. That's what Vic Fangio said. I mean, they medically cleared him to come back to practice 3 weeks ago. Give him a chance to come off of IR. You have a 21-day window, 3 weeks, to either be activated to the 53 or go back on IR for the rest of the year, and then you can't come back. We're at that point today. That's where that decision needs to be made. He's had 3 weeks of practice, and according to Vic Fangio, has not shown a willingness to get back on the field.
Yes, that it's damning.
It really is.
Those are damning words. Even Fox's words. How did I phrase the question? The Fox. How would you measure or evaluate Kyle Fuller's level of want to as far as his return? And I think his answer, that's tough to measure. And this is a guy who goes sometimes out of his way to get into the intangibles about players, about their heart and desire.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who's focusing on them right now because this is a team that still has fight. So he's ready to talk about things like that. But you want to talk about that with Kyle Fuller. Obviously, he's of the same mindset of Vic Fangio. Obviously, they're not happy with what Kyle Fuller is doing in this situation right now.
No, I mean, when Fox first answered your question, I kind of just brushed it off because I was like, all right, he's just avoiding another question. Once Fangio said what he did and I went back to what Fox said, it was pretty telling too. And there just hasn't been much explanation for what's been going on here until yesterday. And now it seems very, very clear. And Kyle Fuller he clearly does not fit the type of player that they want in this building. And let's go back to when these guys took over. So Fuller was the number 14 overall pick in 2014. That was about 9 months before Fox gets hired, Pace gets hired, Fangio's brought in. The early word from Fox and Fangio was that he was a guy they liked coming out of Virginia Tech too. So they were intrigued by him. And as they evaluated what they were inheriting, the hope there was that they had a key piece of the defense that would continue to take step forward. Remember, Kyle Fuller's first season started with a pretty solid start, and then he had a couple injuries. And then the second half of the season wasn't as good. And that was also a year when the whole defense was falling apart, and it was really hard, I think, hard to evaluate things anyway. So after year one, I think the arrow was pointing up, and there was some hope there. By week two of that first season under Fox and Fangio, Kyle Fuller's second season, Fangio benched Kyle Fuller against the Arizona Cardinals late in that game. It was a blowout, and he tried to send a message. And then that week at Halas Hall, I don't know if you remember this, but he went on this whole like comparison to Tiger Woods about his confidence and how Tiger Woods isn't playing with confidence and Kyle Fuller's not playing with confidence, and he needs to find that confidence. Unfortunately, here we are way over a year later. I don't think Kyle Fuller ever found that confidence. In fact, he's decided to sit out this whole season. Shows that he doesn't have that confidence.
Wasn't it around that same time where Tracy Porter was asked about Kyle Fuller, and he kind of openly criticized his film study habits? Now Tracy Porter's kind of legendary for his habits for studying film. Mm-hmm. But as a young player, you would think, I mean, those words, when a veteran player is openly and confidently and okay to publicly question your work habits, I mean, that's a red flag. I'm trying to go back to some of those moments in that Cardinals game. Do you remember when Larry Fitzgerald scored? Was it a flea flicker? It was a trick play, but he was wide open in the end zone, and it was Shea McClellan running into him, and everybody's like, why is Shea McClellan covering Larry Fitzgerald? Why is Shea McClellan? And everybody was ready to rip Shea McClellan's head off again and criticize Fangio. That wasn't Shea McClellan's assignment. I think it was Kyle Fuller's assignment.
Yeah.
It was Shea McClellan who recognized what was going on, improvised on the play, chased after a wide-open Larry Fitzgerald, and nearly broke up the pass and ended up being kind of ridiculed for it by fans on Twitter.
Which brings me to a thing I tweeted yesterday, because I find this fascinating.
I love that we're talking about Shea.
Yeah, it always comes back to Shea somehow. Actually, Zach Zabin and I were talking yesterday about how it seems like every single day at Halas Hall, it somehow comes back to Phil Emery. Because that's how disastrous of a 3-year
reign. You're still cleaning up that
situation. Every day there's something that goes back to a bad decision that Phil Emery made. And I, you know, at some point I hate piling on the guy, but it's just the way it is. I mean, seriously, every day it comes back to something with him. But here we are, Phil's two failed first-round picks, Shea McClellan and Kyle Fuller. The other one was Kyle Long, which was a great pick,
mm-hmm.
and one where, you know, he deserves all the praise in the world, because a lot of teams didn't think Kyle Long should be a first rounder.
Correct.
And he went up and got him, and he's been a phenomenal player. But Kyle Fuller was actually drafted ahead of Shea McClellan, and yet in this town, Shea was always and continues to be more of a lightning rod than Kyle Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not judging that. I'm not even saying it's wrong or right. I'm not sure, but it's interesting to me. And I think part of it is probably that Shea was Phil's first pick.
Yeah.
And I think that it was probably questioned more on draft day. There was mostly excitement about Kyle Fuller, I think.
Yes.
And there was also an understanding that Aaron Donald got picked right before. So this, you know what? It's not like he picked Kyle Fuller over Aaron Donald. Now, he did pick him over Clinton Dix, which I questioned that day.
Yes.
Because I love Clinton Dix. I thought he should have been the pick. I thought he was going to be the pick when Aaron Donald came off the board at number 13. And it was even worse when about an hour later he went to the Packers.
Yeah, you needed a safety. You had Charles Tillman in the twilight of his career. You had Tim Jennings still, who was still... He wasn't the injured Tim Jennings that didn't work out for Ryan Pace and John Fox. Look, what a fall from grace. Literally, his first three games, the two interceptions against Colin Kaepernick mm-hmm. in San Francisco. Then we go across the country to New York, and he kind of baits. God, who did he bait into the interception for the Jets? Was it Geno Smith? It wasn't Geno Smith yet. Who was the quarterback?
Might have been Geno.
Either way, but he baited him into that.
I think I think Geno did play.
Was
game.
It Geno? I mean, obviously, look back at it now. Colin Kaepernick and Geno Smith aren't great quarterbacks, but the promise, the potential, the hope was there for Kyle Fuller. Even if, I mean, he could replace Charles Tillman eventually down the road. The hope was there, and it's turned into a colossal disappointment at this point.
Yeah, it really has. And look, here's the situation. he has still got a year left on his rookie deal. You could throw the fifth-year option way out the window. That's definitely not happening unless a team actually trades for him and decides to do that, which even that would surprise me. Can a team do that if they trade for him?
I have no idea.
I'm not even sure.
I think it's... What would you put the percentage on a trade happening?
Well, that's what I want to get to.
90%?
Well, a team has to be willing to take him. But, okay, so it's $1.7 million that Kyle Fuller's owed next year. And he still is going to carry a cap hit over $3 million because of the signing bonus that's still, you know, attached to the cap number. So, you know, at $1.7 million for a former first-round pick, that's something that I think a team might be willing to take a flyer on. Yeah. Especially for, say, a sixth-round pick. I mean, what are you getting in the sixth round usually anyway? You're kind of just hoping that whoever you get turns into something, you know, a special teamer.
Well, I think the Bears would be willing to take nearly anything for him. Here's the thing where maybe Kyle Fuller may have a bit more value than some of these old veterans they traded. One, he's young. Two, I think there's a level of unknown still with Kyle Fuller at the NFL level, and I think a lot of these teams will turn back to their own draft evaluations of him that made him a legitimate first-round pick. Maybe not a number 14 pick, but maybe a late first-round pick. I think that's still there for some teams. So you try to look around the league, maybe like a Carolina Panthers who run a defense where he would maybe fit better, who have a need at cornerback after Josh Norman didn't work out financially. So they're a team that's still in win-now mode despite what they are this year. They still have all the pieces, I think, in place to maybe make a good run at it next year. So maybe a Kyle Fuller could look there. So, look, we'll have to see. I think there's going to be some value to him, and I think the Bears, I think it's in both interests to maybe part ways, best interest to part ways.
Yeah, I think so at this point. That makes sense. And we've shown a quick, not necessarily a quick trigger, but definitely a definitive trigger for Ryan Pace to get rid of guys that don't fit what they're trying to accomplish here. And I think Kyle Fuller's clearly in that category here. And maybe he'll find another spot and somehow pick up on his career and keep going. And that's probably what he's thinking here. Find a better fit, get that knee healthy, try to play well again. But it certainly hasn't been a good 2016 for Kyle Fuller. All right, let's move on to what the Bears are facing this weekend at Soldier Field. Washington comes to town. This is a noon game Saturday, Christmas Eve. On Fox, the Bears are a 3-point underdog at home, and I think this is a game they can win.
Absolutely. Did you see some of them on Monday night? They did not look
wasn't pretty.
Good. That's another thing. They're not only is it a condensed week because of the Christmas Eve game on Saturday, they played Monday night.
And they have to travel. Not like it's a far trip.
But it's still...
It's traveling, short week for them.
They didn't play well whatsoever, and I get that the Carolina Panthers are... They're like a better bad team. You know what I'm saying? Because they have...
Right, they still have some talent.
Yes.
They're just not playing up to par.
Yeah, that talent doesn't show up every single week. So, yes, they're a better bad team that beat a team that needed to win to keep their playoff hopes alive. They're still alive, I think, for the Redskins. But, look, Kirk Cousins looked off. I think he went into that game with a pass rating over 100. But he was off. The defense looked off. Just a tough loss for the Redskins. Now they got this short week. There's a lot of reasons to like the Bears in this game.
My first question, as we get to our two big questions, is just how the Bears bounce back from what happened Sunday. You know, that was a... I know they're 3-11 and they've been through losing a lot this year, but it was a different feel in that locker room.
It's down.
You could tell they were crushed by, you know, coming back all the way against their rival. I think that game was stressed more. I think they really did feel like they could win, and they were right there. And maybe that gets back to what we started with today and what Jack Silverstein wrote about. I mean, giving them a chance to go for the kill there late, and they didn't. And instead they lost, and Aaron Rodgers got them again. So I'm interested to see on the short week. It's only one day shorter, but you know how they bounce back, because I do think that was a crushing blow against the Packers the other day, even for a team that's now 3-11. And so that's my first question, just how motivated they come out to play on Christmas. You know, their families are going to be around. It's going to be not as cold as last week, certainly, but it's still December in Chicago, and both of these teams. I mean, Washington still has a playoff spot to play for, so they should be motivated.
My question, my first question, kind of goes off of that, because you were there when Alshon Jeffrey spoke. I think we were right next to each other. He was, his voice was quivering. He was shaking. He needed to catch himself as he kind of went on a mini rant after the Packers lost. Yes, that was his first game back from suspension. Yes, he played a big role in the Bears' comeback there in the fourth quarter. I want to see what he could do for an encore. What can he do, if we're going in questions? And I want to see how he translates those emotions that seem so raw and seem kind of really all over the place. I don't know quite what to make of his. I don't know if he was calling out players or calling out coaches.
Confusing.
It was confusing, and I get that emotion is part of that, and I get that he struggles to express himself sometimes. But I want to see what he can do for an encore in this.
Yeah, I think that's a good question too. My second one's going to go towards the secondary and kind of specifically Kravon LeBlanc, how he bounces back from what happened. Vic Fangio did what I suspected he was going to do this week and took the fall for the defensive call that they were in on that 60-yard bomb by Aaron Rodgers, and I think that's a fair thing for him to do. Maybe there should have been help, maybe not, but you could have come up with a different defense that didn't put Kravon LeBlanc in such a tough spot against Jordy Nelson there. But at the same time, Kravon still, and he admitted this after the game, didn't have the best technique on the play. Could have played it better himself, and he didn't. So what's the confidence level like for him bouncing back? And also, how is he used? Can DeAndre Hall get into this mix at some point in these last two games? Because I would think that's a guy they want to get on the field. John Fox, I asked him about this, and he kind of explained that, all right, the guy's just not really healthy yet. Fine. That's fine. If that's the reasoning for Hall not being on the field, on defense, that he's not back from that ankle, maybe the weather played into that, but maybe he's better. Because I think LeBlanc would be better in the slot. And Hall, you got to get a look at him outside.
Yes. The Hall playing through pain thing is just another side note, I think, to the whole Kyle Fuller thing, isn't it?
The fact that he's at least out there on special teams
and contributing
and active
and wants to play and is willing to play through a little discomfort. So, there's a lot of players.
So let's get back to what Fangio said again. A, medically cleared. B, want to get out there on the field. And then C, which is what Fangio said they hadn't gotten to yet with Fuller. Then the coaches develop how healthy or look at how healthy a guy actually is and how much they can contribute. That's where Hall is right now.
Oh, yeah.
And the coaches apparently have decided, okay, he's healthy enough to be out there, but not to be on defense every single play.
Right, it's a slower assimilation.
Yeah.
But
they got past B, which was the player wants to be out there.
Yes, yes, yes. So I guess I did want to see more of Hall. I guess my second question is, look, there's a lot of young players on this team, and I think you want to start seeing strong finishes now from some of these guys. Jordan Howard had the strong finish against the Packers. Leonard Floyd didn't have that best game. I want to see, starting this, well, really the past few games, what these rookies are doing, but I want to see more. What can these rookies, these young players do? This just kind of builds on your Kravon LeBlanc question. What can they do more to show up in this game?
Yeah, and that's really, we've been talking about this for 5-6 weeks now. I mean, that's really what this is all about now for the Bears at this point. And there's been some positives. There's been some negatives. There's been some mixed. I think the Bears like overall what they've seen from, like, Nick Kwiatkowski. But there's also been plenty of plays where I think you clearly see he's a rookie and he's making some mistakes. And there's also been that play he made at the end of the game where he split two offensive linemen
and hurt Lane Taylor.
And they ran into each other.
Yeah.
The two guys ran into each other and Lane Taylor got hurt. And Kwiatkowski made the play. I mean, that's one of those plays where you go, oh, you put that on the highlight film, that's for sure. So there's been good and bad so far. All right, let's get to our bold predictions.
Bold predictions.
All right, what are you thinking here?
Well, last week my bold prediction was the victory. Oh, God, was it looking good for a second there. But my bold prediction this week is that a safety. I wanted to say corner, but Krivon LeBlanc hit the pick six a couple weeks ago. I'm going to say a safety. Not only makes an interception, but has a long return. Maybe not a score. But finally, you know, I'll even go one step further. Wow. Adrian Amos records the first interception of his career in this game. Book it.
That is bold. Not doesn't seem very likely either.
That's why it's bold. He's got to get a break sooner or later, right? Like, an errant pass. He's had a couple slip
but
right
he's
through.
Had some, man. He can't catch the ball.
I know. So this is it. I mean, Kirk Cousins, I like Kirk Cousins as a quarterback, but he struggled last week. I think some of those struggles may continue in some sloppy, wintry mess that could be there Saturday. So, Adrian Amos, pick.
All right. I think I'm going to go bold, but not that bold. I'm going to say Krivon LeBlanc bounces back with an interception.
Okay. I like Krivon LeBlanc.
I think he's
very bright.
Yeah, well, did you hear Ryan Pace praising him for his work ethic on the pregame show, which is the only time you can hear Ryan Pace ever? Yeah.
I hear stories that this guy is he's like Tracy Porter. Late nights, early mornings, film. Look, he doesn't have all the if he was a physical specimen like a Kyle Fuller, you know, and had all those qualities you want physically, he would have been a draft pick, but he wasn't. But he has some other things, the want to, again, going back to some of those qualities, he has the want to try to maximize what he has physically.
Yeah. I think they love him.
They do.
Pace said he's there 24/7, which is obviously not literally, but
close enough.
Sounds like he's there a lot. All right, let's get to our predictions.
Predictions.
I'm going with the Bears in this one, and I think it won't surprise me if they don't win the game, but that was a killer loss for Washington on Monday. Now they got a short week. They got to travel. The weather's not going to be fantastic. I don't think they're even that good to begin with. I think that with this time during the week, the Bears can still – the players still seem to realize how close they are. And I think they come back Saturday and win the game. I think it's still close. Let's say 23-20, Bears win.
Jordan Reed, we haven't talked about him yet. He's messed up. That shoulder, that, what was it, dislocated or just sprained, severely sprained. He did not look right against the Panthers. He looked all out of sorts, in pain. That would be a huge factor. He would be a huge factor in this game because even with Jarrell Freeman coming back, I don't think the Bears have what it takes to cover him, at least in one-on-one matchups. Maybe Nick Kukowski or Jarrell Freeman get lucky once in a while, but I just don't see it. But he's not himself. I think that favors the Bears. Kirk Cousins missing his top threat. And I do like the Bears in this one. I think I got a 27-24. I could see a pretty good day again for Matt Barkley. The Redskins will put up some points, but I think some certain things from the condensed work week to the struggles last week for the Redskins favored the Bears.
I think the tackling will be better.
Yeah.
Just because of how bad it was. They just got to be better.
They were a top 10 team in tackling efficiency.
It was weird. But here's what I was going to get to. I mean, if Eddie Goldman can come back, I don't know if he can or not. But if Goldman can come back by Saturday, that's a huge boost. But Jarrell Freeman coming back, that's a huge boost too. Just getting those instincts back. The linebacker position, I would assume he plays next to Kukowski because like what he's done so far.
Their instincts were right sometimes against Ty Montgomery. They were in position to make the plays, and they just whiffed. They got caught with their feet planted. John Timu literally had him for a tackle for loss, and then all of a sudden he springs a 61-yard run. In a long year, I think you're going to have games like that, but just awful, awful timing.
All right, we're both going Bears here, and they're 3-point underdogs. So we're going Bears straight up. We're going Bears to cover.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, so let's move on to some of our other picks. And
you got some work to do, my friend.
What was it? You're 31.
I'm kicking ass. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're definitely kicking ass. I don't have this up in front of me right now. Let's hang on here. We'll put, you're 31-12-1 over the last 5 weeks. If you
kicking ass
in terms of Vegas numbers, that's like
I should be gambling.
That's like the start the Warriors got off to last year.
I should be gambling.
I mean, you would have plenty of nice Christmas presents to buy if you had been gambling the last 5 weeks.
My kids are spoiled enough. But yes.
Now, if you factor in the whole season, you would have been in such a big hole that you wouldn't have had anything left to gamble.
Yeah.
But
that's true. It's true.
But you're back. You're 9 games over 500. Overall, which
what are you now?
It's considered I'm only 1.
Oh, wow. 8 game lead.
You're four games ahead of me. You're 4 games ahead of me.
Do you want me to make my picks first and you just do the opposite?
Yeah, I might have to try your bullshit strategy that you were doing for a few weeks.
Easy. PG.
It's a podcast.
PG.
The FCC has no control over us here.
Okay.
Maybe they can give me some insight on NFL picks, though. That'd be nice. All right, Vikings and Packers. It's a big game in the NFC North, noon Saturday on Fox, going up against the Bears. My family up in Minnesota on Saturday. Sorry, the Bears contingent that's going to be in the house. I don't think there's going to be much interest in the Bears Washington game. I think they're going to have to find like a side TV because the Vikings Packer game is going to be on.
Yeah,
up there. You know, you're not going to have much control over that. But the Packers are 6.5-point favorite this game in Green Bay, and it's really hard to find a way to think that the Vikings can win this game.
Yes. Can we just call them finished?
They kind of are finished at this
They're
point.
They're done. Did you see the brace on Adrian Peterson's leg? It's enormous. How's the guy supposed to run with something like that? I don't know why he's back. I get that he wants to play hero. I get that he wants to play. He has that want to, as we've been talking about all podcasts, but a little bit too late. Give me the Packers covering in this. I think they actually went big.
You want to lock it up?
No, I got other ones for locking.
Okay.
But I think the Packers cover.
Yeah, I mean, the way the Vikings, the only thing here pointing in the Vikings' favor of covering is that it's a rivalry game.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I mean, they got toasted by the Colts the other day. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and do it.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Because if I'm going to have to go against you in some of these other ones later, I might as well feel good about the one I'm confident about.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, the Lions are at the Cowboys. This is a Monday Night Football game.
It's a tough one, too, I think.
This is a game the Lions need badly. I thought that they would play a little bit better against New York last week. I think we both picked the Giants.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be a little bit more competitive than it was. Did you see the lead in that Tribune Wire story, by the way?
No. What was it?
It was, let's see if I can find the exact wording here. I tweeted it out the other day because it was awesome. Here it is. Matthew Stafford's middle finger wasn't an issue, but the Giants gave the bird to the Lions division title.
That's good. That's good.
That's fantastic. It didn't even have a byline. Yeah. It was just the Wire.
Yeah. The Andy Seligman of
I want to know who wrote that. Give him some props.
How are they saying it's not an issue? Or he's saying it's not an issue, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Clearly it was
an issue. It looked like an issue.
Yeah. Just think about having a sprained ligament in your middle finger and how that affects your grip. Look, he's indoors now. He's not outside.
Not according to Mike Francesa.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
No, what?
Mike went on he was going through all the games on Sunday, and he went on like a 2-minute thing about how the weather was going to be a factor for the Buccaneers and Cowboys, two teams that aren't used to playing in the 20s.
Yeah. Because
it was really cold in Dallas. And Mike, there's a roof on that stadium.
Yeah, yeah. That is a beautiful stadium.
He said he thought the roof would have been open. Which kind of defeats the purpose of the roof.
Okay. Yeah, right.
sorry. I hate calling guys out when they make honest mistakes.
Especially
like that,
for like, you know, Dallas when they get like.
That was funny though.
Yeah. When they don't.
That's
even,
one where, man, you got to just own that. Like, I'm sure I've done something like that before. Just own it and make fun of yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, didn't we talk about some player being in a game that wasn't going to be in a game once or something like that?
Oh, yeah. What was that? Oh, no. We you know what? We had a similar gaffe. We broke down that Raiders game.
Oh, yeah, and it was in Mexico.
and I think I said that I was given, you know, Raiders playing well at home. The game was in Mexico.
Yeah. Well, they won, right? Raiders won.
Yeah, they did. What? Who were they playing that game again? Texans? I forget.
Long
they did win the game, though. But, yeah, I realized, like, later that day that, whoops, that one's not even played in this country.
I like the Lions in this one. Covering.
You did correctly pick the Bucs to cover in Dallas last week, which you got by one goddamn point.
I think the Lions are better than the Bucs. I think Matthew Stafford's finger will be less of a factor with another week, with him being indoors. I think Dallas continues to surprise me because I just keep expecting them to. They're going to hit their rough point in the playoffs probably. If it's not going to, maybe they are kind of in a rough point right now, but I like the Lions. I think the Cowboys will win, but I like the Lions getting the 7 points.
I tend to agree with you here, but
you're not going to catch up that way, Adam Hogue.
Right. So I'm going to pick the Cowboys.
All right.
But let the record show, if I was putting money on this game, I would probably put it on the Lions.
Your pride is on the line though.
But my pride is on the line. I got to come back. I only got 2 weeks to do it.
Mm-hmm. You got to get bold.
All right. I'm taking the Cowboys.
Okay.
Moving on. We got the Buccaneers at the Saints. Picking this one because it's still got huge playoff implications and mainly on the NFC North and the Packers potentially getting it as a wild card if they don't win the NFC North. So that's still a possibility because right now the Packers are the sixth seed, even as a wild card. So the division still could send two teams in here. 3:25 game Saturday on Fox. Bucks at New Orleans. The Saints, this kind of surprised me. The Saints are a 3-point favorite.
Well, they put up a lot of points. And I don't think everybody's sold on the Buccaneers. Clearly, Las Vegas is not sold on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I am. And Vegas, if they were betting, I should be in Vegas right now with these picks. Give me the Buccaneers at 3 points. That playoff push is there. The Buccaneers looked very good in stretches in Dallas.
They surprised me. I didn't think they were going to cover.
Yeah.
And they did. They were in there.
Yeah.
They had a lead at one point.
Now they're getting 3 points. They got their playoff lives at stake. Give me some Jameis Winston. He's going after those crab legs. Just wait.
Crap. I agree with you here. And I agree with you so much, I don't even think I can go with the Saints. Not with those 3 points going the opposite way.
That way, my friend.
So I'm going to take the Bucks. Nuts. All right, Ravens are at the Steelers. This is a huge one in the AFC North. 4.5-point favorite. The Steelers are at home in this game. 3:30 on Sunday now. So there are two games on Christmas Day. This is the first one. It's at 3:30 Sunday on the NFL Network.
Of course, the NFL is not going to. There's going to be a lot of people sitting at home looking for something to watch on TV. And you know, I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life. I hear it's a wonderful story.
You haven't?
Never. Never. That's not on my Christmas movie list.
It's one of those movies like I've watched out of obligation.
Okay.
And because I'm American.
Okay, Trump.
But I don't watch it regularly. I've never seen it.
You know,
I watch Elf every year. Okay.
That's a go-to Christmas movie for me. I got to watch Home Alone.
Home Alone.
Even
solid.
Home Alone 2. It's a Christmas story. Got to watch that. Anyway, some people want to watch some football, so you know the NFL needs to take over some airwaves there.
They're going to threaten the NBA. Do you watch the NBA on Christmas Day?
I never do. No. Don't. It's too early in the season for me to get into NBA. But anyway, hit that lock button, my friend. I think this one might surprise you.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Jolly old Big Ben is going to run roughshod over the Ravens.
That doesn't surprise me. I thought you were going to pick the Ravens here for a second.
Well, 4.5 4.5
Yeah.
Steelers.
I like the Steelers here, too.
They're a dangerous team, man.
They are, and it's a huge game. With the 4.5 though, I'm going to pick the Ravens. Because I think this one's going to be close. I think it's going to be close. I think the Steelers win. But I think this comes down to the wire. I think it's a good, fun game to watch on Christmas Day. And I also need to come back on you. So, Raven. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
All right. The nightcap on Christmas Day. Broncos at Chiefs. Another pretty solid game. That was a surprising loss by the Chiefs last week.
Yeah.
At home against the Titans.
Marcus Mariota is a player. Sorry. That's it. That's all I'm going to say about that. But Marcus Mariota.
I love that kid.
He is a difference maker, man. He could be something special there for to the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, so this is a 7:30 game Sunday on NBC. Speaking of a team that's, well, not toast to the way the Vikings are, but the Broncos are what they are at this point.
Did you read Mike Silver's report on the... Yeah. The shouting matches in that locker room after Russell Okung wanted to talk. And Aqib Talib said, "Hell no, you shut up." or something like that. "You sit down, Russell Okung. You don't talk to me." You know, something in that manner happened in that locker room when Gary Kubiak opened it up for apparent talkers. And it did not go well for good old Gary. And that got out of the bag. So... look, maybe that helps rally the troops. That is a very good defense, I think. But I really like the Chiefs in this one. I think they respond. They need to respond more than the Broncos need to respond. So give me big Andy Reid.
All right.
Oh, man. You should just pick first and I'll get.
No, because then you're just going to pick the same. Well, we're on the same page again here. I got to go with the Chiefs. I think the Broncos are... competitive team, but they just, like last week against the Patriots, it's just the better team was always going to win out. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way about this one this week, especially in Kansas City. I think the Chiefs bounce back from last week's disaster and go ahead and win this game. All right, we do have a couple college games to pick this week. Now, these games are... they're not actually being played over the weekend, but they, because it's bowl season and games are played every day. We had the Boca Raton Bowl last night. Did you watch it?
No.
You didn't watch Western Kentucky versus whoever they were playing?
No.
Me neither.
Did anybody sit out other than spectators?
Yeah. The stadium was... did you... oh, man. The photo of the game that's played at the Marlins Stadium...
how many people?
I mean, it looked like you could have counted them.
Yeah, there's too
like
many bowls.
A couple,
man.
Hundred. It was bad. It was bad.
It's probably just staff members from the respective
schools.
Well,
that's what they do, though. That like, people wonder how these bowls can exist. But
yeah,
if you accept a bid to a bowl, you're required to buy a block of tickets that you then have to.
Well,
sell
these sponsors
to your fans.
Give these teams money anyway, right? That's why you want to go to the bowl games, because whoever's sponsoring the Boca Raton Bowl.
Well, no, they just get gifts. The sponsors are paying the bowl.
No, but the schools get money, though. If you make a bowl, aren't schools paid?
No, the schools have. That's what I'm saying. The schools take the cost of having to go.
No, I'm sure some of these bowl
Read
games.
Read Dan Wetzel's book on the BCS system.
Okay.
It is so incredible. But, like, you're required to buy a block of tickets. That's usually, unless you're talking about the Rose Bowl and your fans are eager to go, a lot of times you're not selling out your block of tickets. So you're eating those costs.
Yeah.
You then have to pay for your entire team to go out there. A lot of these teams are sending extra planes with family and stuff too, which costs all that much money. Most of these bowl games are losers for the schools that play in them. They incur those costs because they give you an extra, from a team standpoint, gives you an extra month to practice, extra game to play in. And it's, you know, the thing is they're still on ESPN. It gives you some exposure. It's better than no exposure.
Yeah.
And a lot of these coaches, too, have clauses in their contracts that a bonus kicks in for making a bowl game.
So is it just the big bowl games where the schools get money? I know for a fact the schools get money for making some bowl games.
I have to go back and look into that again.
Okay. Because they get some type of financial benefit for making it, other than the gifts they get.
Okay. I don't know about that off the top of my head. But anyway, I would recommend reading Dan Wetzel's book, Death to the BCS.
Okay.
I want to say
fantastic writer for Yahoo, by the way.
Who helped him with that one? Was that Jeff Passan? Even though he's
also of Yahoo, right?
Yeah, I want to say they worked on that together. It's a great. I mean, the BCS is over now, but it's still worth reading. I love that book. All right, so here's the games we're picking in the next week. They're not over the weekend, but they're both before we come back next Thursday with our last preview podcast of the year. Minnesota at. Playing Washington State in San Diego in the Holiday Bowl. This game will be played on Tuesday, 6 p.m., December 27th on ESPN. It's a Big Ten game. That's why we're picking it. But also after everything that's happened in the last week with the Gophers threatening to boycott this game over the sexual assault allegations and the punishments that were handed down.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden the report got out there and players changed the tune a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Washington State's a 10-point favorite in this game. I'm interested. I didn't look this up, but I wonder how much that line has swung since it first came out.
Wasn't Northern Illinois the
replacement team?
Yes. So intriguing. I'm sure that's going to have a big distraction factor for the Gophers. Washington State, his name's eluding me, but the quarterback's pretty good. Luke Falk, who is a sophomore, right? True sophomore. Look for him maybe next year as far as draft prospects go. Give me Washington State.
This is tough. 10 points is a ton. Minnesota's a decent team with a good defense. Washington State really struggled against Washington.
Which is a good team.
Which is a really good team.
Much better than Minnesota.
Much better than Minnesota. I mean, what makes it so hard? First of all, bowl games are always hard to judge the motivation factor. I mean, these games are hard to pick straight up because you have, like Houston the other day. I don't even remember who they played, but Houston was a really good team that beat Oklahoma to start the year. Their coaches left. They showed up for whatever bowl game that was and got blown out of the water.
Well, here's the thing about, you talk about a month's worth of preparation. I mean, look, Minnesota obviously... How good was that preparation when you had all that stuff going on? And I'm not going to get into details of that. I don't want to really comment on what kind of stance they were making or weren't. But their focus was elsewhere. Obviously, this kind of went up nearly almost to the game, maybe what, a week out of the game. So clearly there's going to be a catch-up factor here. And Washington State, again, with their quarterback, it's – they seem superior in the situation, sets up better for them.
All right, I'm going to take the Gophers just because it's 10 points. A lot of random things can happen in bowl games. Maybe this somehow made them all closer. Maybe, it's hard to judge the situation. And most importantly, I need to play catch up here. Gophers. That's the rationale. All right, we move on to the Pinstripe Bowl, which is a week from today, actually. I will be there. Northwestern is playing number 23 Pittsburgh. This being played in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium. Again, next Wednesday, it's a 1 o'clock game Central Time here on December 28th on ESPN. Pittsburgh favored by 5.5.
I can't remember his name. Have you done your research into Pittsburgh yet?
I mean, I've done some.
The quarterback, what's his name? I hear he's a draftable player.
Yeah, Nathan Peterman, their senior quarterback, used to play at Tennessee.
Yes. They run a pro-style offense, decent enough arm strength. Now, look, maybe he's not up there with your Deshaun Kizer, your Deshaun Watson, your Mitch Trubisky. I can't even say that name right yet. Declare kid already. But this, I'm just hearing, just passing along some rumblings. That's what we do. keep an eye on him when you're down there. Let's see what your scouting report is after this game.
Remember Tom Savage, who just took over last week for our favorite quarterback, Brock Osweiler, on this podcast, was a kind of a one-year wonder at Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peterman's been playing for 2 years now. He used to play for Tennessee, transferred out when it was clear that he wasn't going to play, and Josh Dobbs has been there now. Josh Dobbs, I think, is going to be at the Senior Bowl, by the way, the Tennessee quarterback. Totally different type of player, though. And I don't know if he can make it
in the NFL.
In the NFL that way. But, yeah, so now that was more Paul Christ, I think, if I'm remembering the timing right, that was with Savage. And there's a lot of quarterbacks that are playing in the NFL right now that can throw some money Paul Christ way for the job that he's done.
Yeah.
His name came up first. Potential Rams coach, by the way.
Really?
I mean, he is like a pro style
guy.
But I don't know that his personality
they
fits
want
in the NFL.
Splash. Yeah.
That would be
that's
the
why
opposite.
John Gruden's there.
That would be the opposite of Splash. Yeah. I love Paul to death, but if he came into L.A. mumbling and it's a great opportunity this week. No chance that works.
No. Stan Kroenke does not want that.
No chance. But he's a phenomenal coach and works so well with quarterbacks. There's rumblings right now Malik Zaire might go to Wisconsin, and he should look at what Russell Wilson did his 1 year with Paul Christ at Wisconsin. That's another guy who I think owes Paul some money for developing him the way that he did that 1 year. I think that'd be a great idea for Malik Zaire, but he's kind of waiting right now to see what Mitch Trubisky is going to do at North Carolina, and he might replace him there. So that'll all be interesting. And Mitch Trubisky, if he does declare, is going to be a guy I think we're going to be talking about for the next few months, potentially for the Bears. But yeah, back to this game and Peterman and Pitt, 5.5 point favorites. Pittsburgh is in this one. Did you say which way you're going?
No. I like Pittsburgh. Sorry.
That's fine.
You just pick them, sideline reporters. Pick them.
Well, Pitt is a good team. I think they're a dangerous team. Well, hell, they beat Clemson in Clemson this year. I think that shows you everything that you need to know in this one. It's tough. I don't like picking against Northwestern, especially when they're getting 5.5. I need to come back on you. So give me the Cats. I think this is where it all swings back in my favor this week.
You're gonna be thinking about that when you're doing your sideline reports.
Probably not.
You should.
I probably won't be thinking about
you. Well, I'm gonna be bringing it up. I'll text you when you're on that sideline. When Nathan Peterman is driving in the red zone.
You can hear that game, by the way, next Wednesday on WGN Radio. We'll have it for you, the Pinstripe Bowl pregame starting at 12:30 next Wednesday. Little break during your holiday week.
Mm-hmm.
Get some football in. It should be a good game, actually. And the attraction here is that it's at Yankee Stadium.
I've been there for a hockey game, actually.
When did they play hockey there?
We were there for the Super Bowl week.
Oh, yeah.
And they had their stadium series, and Mark Potash and I, my colleague from the Sun-Times, took in, was it the Islanders and the Rangers? No, Devils and Rangers. I forget. It was a good day. It was just cool to see.
Yeah. I do remember that now that I think about it. But, yeah, the weather, not so excited about the weather. I am excited to see a football game at Yankee Stadium. That's the
attraction. You're going to be bundled up like Zach Zabin. Have you looked at the weather yet?
It should be. I have. It's supposed to be in the 40s right now.
That's not horrible.
Shorts
on.
We had that game at Minnesota in November. That was single digits.
Yeah.
Single digit wind chills. That's probably the coldest I've had in 2 years.
Yeah.
On that job. We had a couple cold ones last year. This one shouldn't be that bad. It's just, these bowl games are a little bit nicer when we played in Florida.
Yeah.
Nice.
Get a vacation out of it.
Yeah. No, it'll be fun. And see if the Cats can help my cause against you. All right, time to wrap this bad boy up. We got to get to House Hall, figure out maybe Kyle Fuller will talk today. Probably not.
Well, not if he's not activated.
But he could if he wants to. He's allowed to.
Yeah. He's a man.
If not, I think we've probably heard the last of Kyle Fuller.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk today. So we'll see.
That's a wrap on him and a wrap on this podcast.
That's right.
Follow
us on Twitter at Adam Hoge, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. The podcast is at INT Grounding Pod. You can read us throughout the week, WGNRadio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. Subscribe on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. Please rate, review the podcast. Appreciate you doing that. We will talk to you on... Actually, we're not doing a post-game. I don't even know if we talked about it. We're not going to have a post-game pod Saturday because I have to fly to Minnesota to see
my
family.
That's right.
And we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll come back Monday and
do it. Let's do it Monday.
Or maybe, yeah, we'll get it to eventually. But look, you guys got your Christmases and holidays and everything to celebrate this weekend anyway. So we'll get it to you at some point. But there won't be a post-game pod immediately following Saturday's game. We'll be back as normal next week, though. And it's good to be back here and kind of back in the routine as
Absolutely.
It is. We'll talk to you guys next week.